This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ed Murphy joins me live on the program, an astronomer at the University of Virginia, and of course UVA breaking news today that researchers there have discovered something very exciting. Ed, what's going on?
Hi, Coy. How are you?
Very good. Very good.
Well, the discovery that was made by astronomers here, especially Amy Rhines, who's one of our graduate students, is that they discovered in a nearby dwarf galaxy about 30 million light years away from us that the galaxy is home to a supermassive black hole, which no one had expected from such a small galaxy.
Wow. So, well, remind us now what exactly that is. What exactly is a black hole?
So a black hole is any object that gets small enough that its gravity is strong enough that not even light can escape from it. And black holes form in a couple ways. The most common way that they form today is when supermassive stars die at the end of their lives. When the star dies, it explodes in a supernova explosion, and an object can be left over that's so dense and its gravity is so strong that light can't get out of it, and that's a black hole, a stellar mass black hole, and they typically weigh a few times the mass of our sun.
Now, sometimes in movies and stuff, they'll portray a black hole as like if you get too close of it, all of a sudden you slip into some alternative dimension. Does it work like that, or you would get sucked in against something so small and hard it would destroy you instantly?
It's the latter one. If you got too close to a black hole, you would get sucked in. But as you got sucked in, the gravity would be strong enough that it would actually tear you apart. What happens, really, if you think about falling into a black hole feet first, is as you get close to it, the strength of gravity is so great that the force of gravity on your feet, which are a little bit closer to the hole since you're falling feet first, is stronger than the gravity on your head, and that would have the tendency to pull you apart. So as you fell into the black hole, you get torn into trillions and trillions of atoms, and then those atoms would fall into the black hole.
Amazing. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer at the University of Virginia. Very exciting discovery at UVA, the discovery of a new black hole. Actually, how do you discover a black hole, Ed? What's the process?
It's a great question, because people often wonder that. If black holes give off no light, how do we know that they exist? And the answer is that as material falls into the black hole, we were imagining a second ago what would happen if we went into a black hole. As that material falls in, it falls into orbit around the black hole. And as it very, very quickly spins and tries to fall into the black hole, before it gets into the black hole, it heats up primarily through friction. As these atoms are all spinning around the disk very quickly, they're colliding with one another and rubbing against one another. And they get up to a temperature of about 2 million degrees. And at that temperature, they start to emit X-rays, and they show up on X-ray telescopes. And the most common way for discovering black holes in the universe, in fact, is using giant X-ray telescopes like the Chandra X-ray Observatory and finding the emission from X-rays. And I had mentioned that the most common kind of black holes today are these ones that are a couple times the mass of our sun. But a couple decades ago, astronomers started discovering that deep down in the centers of galaxies are black holes that must have formed in some other way, because they don't weigh just a few times the mass of our sun. They're typically many millions, or in some cases billions of times the mass of our sun. And these were given the name supermassive black holes. And the origin of these supermassive black holes is still a mystery. Generally, when we look at big galaxies like our Milky Way galaxy, we usually find a supermassive black hole down at the center of the galaxy. And astronomers are now, or have wondered for a while, does the galaxy form around the supermassive black hole? So that is, the black hole forms first and the galaxy forms around it. Or does the galaxy form first and somehow the supermassive black hole then forms in the center of the galaxy? Or do they both happen at the same time? And what's interesting about today's result is that this galaxy that they discovered it in is not a supermassive galaxy like our Milky Way. It's a little tiny galaxy, and it's got this supermassive black hole in it. And that's an indicator that maybe, if this holds up in many other cases, that the black holes can form independently of the giant galaxy that they live in.
So that's the real significance of this, because other black holes have been discovered. The real significance is here's a big black hole in a very tiny galaxy.
Exactly. So this is a little tiny galaxy. It's a really interesting galaxy. It's Hennei's 2-10. So it's just got a catalog name named after the astronomer who first studied it. And this galaxy is interesting because it's undergoing a rapid burst of star formation, over 10 times more rapid than stars form in our Milky Way galaxy. But in terms of size, it's much, much smaller than the Milky Way galaxy. And we wouldn't have expected to find a supermassive black hole at the center of this galaxy. And I think what's most interesting about this study is it shows the value of luck and serendipity in science, is that the investigators weren't actually looking for a supermassive black hole. They were interested in studying the rate at which stars are forming in this galaxy and why it's forming stars so much faster than our Milky Way. And they discovered, using radio observations with the Very Large Array, which is a giant radio telescope in New Mexico, that it had a very bright radio source in the middle. And then they looked up what other observatories had seen, and they saw that the Chandra X-ray Observatory saw an X-ray source right at the same location. And that combination of a radio emitter and an X-ray source is an indicator that it could be a supermassive black hole. And then more studies back that up.
Could the increase in star formation in this little galaxy have anything to do with the black hole?
They don't know that, but probably not. When you see these young, very young galaxies like this undergoing these bursts of star formation, it oftentimes has to do with the fact that they're interacting with another nearby galaxy. That is, the gravity of a nearby galaxy is interacting with it, and it's pushing and pulling the clouds of gas around, and that has caused gravity to collapse these clouds and form stars.
Amazing. We're talking with Ed Murphy, an astronomer at the University of Virginia, UVA, announcing big news today that researchers there have discovered a supermassive black hole that we did not know about before in a tiny little galaxy. Ed, does our galaxy have a black hole?
Yes, our galaxy has a supermassive black hole down in its center, and the mass of our galaxy's black hole is about 2.6 million times the mass of our sun. And the one in this small galaxy is about a million times the mass of our sun.
Now, does a black hole move around and eat stuff up as it goes, or does it just stay in the same spot and not really be a threat to anybody?
Well, it stays in the same spot, and it's a threat to you only if you're foolish enough to travel too close to it. A great thing that people often have this picture in their mind is that black holes are sucking everything in the universe into them because their gravity is so great. But that's really only true if you get right up close to the black hole, just outside of it. If you're very far away from the black hole, then its gravity acts like anything else of that mass. The best example I can give you is our sun. Imagine that our sun were to instantly turn into a black hole. At our distance away from the sun, the force of gravity that we feel would be the same, because the force of gravity depends on three things. It depends on the mass of the sun, the mass of the Earth, and the distance between the Earth and the sun. And if the sun were to instantly turn into a black hole, its mass doesn't change, our mass doesn't change, and our distance from the sun doesn't change. So the force of gravity is the same. And if the sun were to instantly turn into a black hole, the Earth would just continue orbiting this black hole. We wouldn't get any heat or light from the sun, so that would be bad. But we wouldn't get sucked into it. But if we got very, very close to it, where the force of gravity was quite strong, then there's no escaping, and that's when you fall in.
Ed Murphy is an astronomer at the University of Virginia. Very exciting news, and thanks for explaining it to us. I'm curious, what if you look out on the horizon of 2011, what big space news are you think we're looking at this year, whether it's events or research, anything going on that you have your eye on?
You know, I think the big news is going to be what happens to the space shuttle program. As you're probably aware, the Space Shuttle Discovery was supposed to launch in November, and just before launch, they discovered that there were a number of cracks in the giant external tank. And the more investigation they did, the more cracks they turned up, the more concerned they became about it. So in one of the relatively few episodes of the Space Shuttle program, they actually had to roll the Space Shuttle and tank back to the Vehicle Assembly Building, and now they're examining this tank in detail, coming up with methods and techniques to repair the tank before they move it back out again. And so although it was supposed to launch in November, the launch has now been delayed until at least end of February, and that's only if things go well. It may be delayed even further than that. And that is scheduled to be the second from last mission in the Space Shuttle program. The next mission after that was scheduled for April, And as you probably heard, the tragic news in the last few days, the space shuttle commander for that, his wife was the representative that was shot in Tucson, Arizona, yeah, the other day. And so it's not clear what will happen to that mission right now. It's too soon for NASA to have made a decision as to whether they will replace the commander with someone else or delay the mission further to give him time. We'll just have to wait over the next few weeks and see what her prognosis is.
Yeah. Ed Murphy, astronomer at the University of Virginia. And the latest on the Mars rovers, both of them are still alive, right?
Well, yes and no. We haven't heard from Spirit since March, and I think that's another big news to keep your eye on for 2011 is, as you might remember, the rover Spirit, one of the two rovers, their Spirit and Opportunity on Mars, Spirit was suffering some problems. Two of its wheels had stopped operating, and then it got itself stuck in some sand. And after a number of months of trying, NASA was unable to get it out of the sand trap that it found itself in. And so they decided to stop trying to get it out and just do science where it was. But the problem is it wasn't positioned very well. And as winter time came and the sun got lower and lower in the sky and the solar arrays weren't developing enough electricity, eventually they knew they wouldn't get enough electricity to operate the rover, and it would shut itself down. And the last time we heard from it was in March of 2010. Now, winter has come and gone on Mars. It's springtime on that part of Mars, and the sun is getting higher and higher in the sky. And the hope is eventually it will generate enough electricity to awaken the rover, and as long as nothing was damaged, the rover should wake up and call home. They were hoping that would happen in November or December, and it hasn't yet happened. Now, we still have some more time. The sun is still getting higher and higher, so those solar arrays will be generating more and more electricity. But it may be that something on the rover has failed, and we will simply never hear from it again.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Opportunity is making great progress across the surface of Mars. It's on its way to investigating a giant crater, and it will spend a good part of 2011 simply driving across the surface of Mars to get to this next crater that they want to examine.
Isn't there a plan to send a much bigger rover to Mars?
Yes, and that should happen this year as well. It's called the Mars Science Laboratory. And whereas the two rovers that we have on Mars right now, Spirit and Opportunity, are about the size of a golf cart, the new rover, the Mars Science Lab, is a much more capable rover about the size of a compact car. And whereas Spirit and Opportunity were designed to last about 3 months, about 90 days on the surface of Mars, the new rover is designed to last at least a year. Now, of course, we know that Spirit and Opportunity have been operating on the surface of Mars for almost 7 years now, or in fact, over 7 years now. And so we got much more than the plan out of Spirit and Opportunity, and hopefully the same will be true for the Mars Science Laboratory. And that launch is scheduled for later in the year. This time we're only sending the one rover. And it's a very interesting machine compared to the other two rovers. Solar arrays, it's got a nuclear power supply so that it can operate both day and night.
That's cool. It's going to be able to do a lot more, right?
A lot more. In fact, one of the neat things about it is it has a laser on board so that instead of having to go up and drill into each rock and sample them directly, it can stand back and zap them with a laser and analyze the gases that come off to determine whether it's worth actually driving all the way over to the rock and drilling into it.
It's great.
Yeah.
Ed, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. No problem, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.